The Dice Man cometh.
Still the lamest radio intro ever. The Dice Men cometh are back for another Wednesday night on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark joining you. If you loved board games as a child, the good news is that board games have grown up with you. Do you like that? That's a good line.
That is a good line.
I just came out with that.
You're making me realise how much I've missed playing games this week. Moving house sucks.
But on the bright side, you have just been dumped by your girlfriend. So now... plenty more time to play games.
Ouch.
What are we talking about this week?
Today we're going to talk about what we've been playing. We're going to talk about, are board games racist? How politically correct are our board games these days? We're going to have a great chat with Ben Hughes, who's got an exciting Kickstarter. We're going to look at some large group games, games you can play with up to, oh, crikey, 68 people even. We're going to do a review of the most amazing Euro game, which Trent will hate, of course, Puerto Rico. And, of course, we might even revisit the Designer Diary.
Oh, no. All that and more coming up on The Dice Men Cometh. This is Blue Summer Flake on Edge Radio. Summer Flake's Blue on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Trent and Mark, the Dice Man cometh, talking board games tonight.
And Trent, it's time to talk about what we've been playing. Now, of course, it's been leaked all over the internet that I've been moving house. I like to think of it that I've been playing the real-life version of Pack'em Stack'em, the sort of spatially aware game where you're trying to fit as much stuff as you can into the back of a small plastic truck. I've been playing it on a real-life scale.
Tetris with everything that you own.
Absolutely right. Yeah, what about you?
Look, I've managed to completely overdo myself in your absence. I played 8 games.
Oh my goodness.
Over the weekend, and my wife is barely talking to me, which could be... maybe one of the reasons why I've been told explicitly that I am not to go to the Edge Radio party.
Radio
Christmas party, which is happening as we speak. The Edge Radio crew getting ready to annihilate itself. Sorry, guys, won't be turning up.
We'll have one for you.
Anyway, what have we been playing? I played a game called Chicken Caesar.
Really?
Yes. Look, it's a Kickstarter from a mob called Nevermore Games, and it's their very first project. Chicken Caesar, it reimagines the Roman Senate as a chicken coop.
Right.
And I love the idea because it just kind of blows up that whole idea of, you know, what board games are supposed to be about, rolling your dice and moving around some kind of track or something. It's not a particularly funny game.
Yeah.
In fact, it's actually quite cutthroat.
There's no sort of, I say boy, look over here, boy, et tu, brute, boy.
My big criticism of this game is that there actually aren't enough chickens in it. You're playing a family of chickens that's competing for various positions in the Roman Senate. You've got to get yourself voted into various positions of power and get the token for occupying that position, but you're relying on other people's votes to get you into those spots. So there's a lot of negotiation, a lot of bribery and corruption, just like any good democracy. Once you get into the positions, you can do things like set taxes, exile other chickens, deploy traitor chickens. Chicken Caesar themselves gets to veto other chickens' decisions. But look, there is one large wooden chicken token.
Right?
It represents whose go it is, basically.
Is that
it moves around the table. But
do you call it a cheeple?
Oh, nice. It's quite similar to Nothing Personal.
I was going to say, actually. It sounded like it from the description.
This is one of our favourite games of this year, which is a mafia-themed game. But yeah, look, a lot of negotiation. A bit more streamlined, though, I think, and quick playing. But gets a thumbs up from me. And what have you been playing? Oh, that's right, Mark. Nothing.
Yes, right. Nothing personal, just nothing.
So, look, can I talk about something else?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Another one of our favourite games that's come out this year is Archipelago.
Oh, yes.
One of the games of the year, in fact, right through the industry, universally acclaimed from Asmodee, one of the best publishers out there at the moment. They put out Seven Wonders and Eclipse and Cyclades and Dixit, which are all big, big board games at the moment for those of us in the know.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is it's actually, you know, a French company. Like, everyone talks about all these fantastic Euro games coming out of Germany, but this French company have really sort of seized La Boule by the horns, and they're coming out with some great games.
And this is very much a sort of Euro-themed game, but there's a lot more going on than most games. 3 to 5 players, 2 hours at least. Mm. This is a lot of game. Basically an archipelago, each player is exploring, colonizing and developing a sort of vaguely Caribbean, Pacific, South American chain of islands. Why do we play games, Mark?
For the mental challenge?
Is that
trip?
It? Yeah, okay.
For the social lubricant of something to talk about while we're hanging out with a group of friends and we run out of
that's
beer?
That's part of it. But look, I mean, essentially it's because we're nerds, all right?
And, yes,
and,
there
and
is
nerds
that.
Like breaking down little systems and trying to maximise the returns that you get from your investment in that, yeah?
Yeah, and that whole concept of building an engine where you start with the pieces, you slowly put it together over time, and then all of a sudden it starts to ratchet along at its own pace.
Yeah, well, look, this is absolutely hitting that spot, this game, Archipelago. There are so many different paths to victory in this. There is so much going on. You've got public victory conditions, so certain things that everybody's moving towards as they explore and develop this chain of islands, but then there's also hidden goals as well, and you just don't know what people are trying to do.
That was one of the things I loved about this game the first few times I played it, I totally forgot that everyone else had these sort of victory conditions that I didn't have, but I was still supposed to be working towards those. So that whole thing of, well, what's Trent doing over there? He's building a lot of temples. Maybe he's got the temple victory goal. I don't know. Sort of, you know, really gets your brain working.
It's a lot of game. It's very long, but it's very rewarding if you're prepared to put the time in. But look, there is something that's bothering me about it, though.
Mm.
Okay. And it hinges on this. There's a mechanic in the game amongst the many, many mechanics that are, you know, because there's like a domestic market, there's an international market, there's an exploration mechanic, and there are natives working in this archipelago, all right? And there's a mechanic in there where if there's too many of them and they get a bit uppity about the colonialists coming in, then the natives actually revolt, and then everyone loses.
The natives are revolting!
Exactly, and this has got me thinking, is this racist?
Mm.
Mark, are board games racist?
Well, Trent,
am I a racist for playing this?
It's an interesting question, and I think it's such an interesting question, I think we should talk about it a bit more after the next track.
Because I'm convinced that board games are racist. I'm telling you, this one is the natives in Archipelago, they're all dark-skinned, they've got top knots. Right, all that's missing is the bone through the nose. It's not it's not a pretty sight if you want to take the time to look at it.
Mm.
And we'll do that in just a moment on Edge FM with the Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark tonight and Mac DeMarco's Ode to Viceroy. The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark tonight, talking board games and card games, and also talking to a designer of a board game based in Geelong, a young bloke by the name of Ben Hughes, who's got a Kickstarter up and running at the moment. He's crowdsourcing his dream to send a box of spiders to everybody for Christmas.
And it's not his first game, even.
No. We're going to talk all about that with Ben in... Well, look, actually, I spoke to him last night, so, you know, I'll play the chat that we had.
Cool.
Nice young guy, and you can check that out on Kickstarter.
Brilliant. So let's come back to that question about are board games racist?
Yes.
The political correctness of the whole thing. I mean, look, I'd like to point out to you a classic game that I had never thought about. Carcassonne.
Carcassonne, the tile lane.
Yeah,
game.
And look...
Named after the French city.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, what's racist about that? You're building a walled city.
Well, it's not so much racist, but it's disrespectful to a particular group of people. It's disrespectful to farmers, because when you play the little farmer meeple, they lay down. I mean, it's implying that farmers lay down on the job and don't do anything.
That's classist. Yes, that's a very good example. We mentioned Nothing Personal earlier, our favourite mafia-themed game at the moment, full of Italian stereotypes.
Extremely right. I mean, you're going to make an offer you can't refuse. Yeah. You're going to kiss my ring.
And sure, so is The Godfather, but it's all about how sensitively it's done, I suppose.
Look, another one that comes to mind for me is Arkham Horror, actually. I mean, you talk about...
The Cthulhu game.
Yeah, you talk about freedoms. I mean, it's disrespectful. It's discriminating against cultists. They have the right to practice their own religion.
Not if it means sacrificing people to try and awaken Almighty Cthulhu from his slumber.
freedom of religion is freedom of religion, as far as I can see.
Okay, I hope you got a better example than that.
Yeah, look, here's one. I haven't played it, but I've heard a lot about it, actually. It's called Lunch Money, and it's a game of little kids beating each other up and stealing their lunch money.
Oh, yeah, but that's funny, surely.
Oh,
that's
not
racist.
No, well, it's not racist, but I don't know how correct it is to sort of make fun of beating up little kids and stealing their money. That could be very traumatising, because as you may well know yourself, many, many nerds would have been beaten up and had their lunch money stolen.
I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about. Now, you play Netrunner.
I have played Netrunner, yes.
Now, how many, which is like a cyberpunk game of hacking into corporations' computers, how many black or Asian characters are depicted in that game? Any? Can you think of any at all?
Vaguely have a vague recollection of maybe one of the runners may have been non-white, but you're right.
I've had a look through that deck, yeah. And it's very, very white.
Yeah, it is a very white game.
Now, look, I'd like to add to this, this list of examples, any science fiction game ever, which is always all about vicious insect aliens trying to invade the Earth,
yes.
Inherently racist. Why aren't we working together for the betterment of both species?
Yeah, well, look, another classic example, Mall of Horrors, in that you're running around the mall in a sort of Day of the Dead type thing, but it discriminates against blondes, because the area of the mall that has the most blondes, you know, there's one blonde female character that each person has, wherever the most blondes are, their stupid bimbo screaming attracts extra zombies. I mean, I'm really not up for that.
Yeah, look, obviously that's a trope from zombie films and zombie stories.
Yeah.
But look, the point that we're making is that in any story that you tell, and games are stories, inevitably you inherit the dominant cultural biases. And I think to a certain degree it is inevitable. But then looking at Archipelago, which we were a moment ago, I'm thinking to myself, is it fair enough to depict the natives in this way? Because is it an historical simulation? And does that make it okay?
Yeah.
Does the fact that the colonialists were exploiting the natives make it okay to do it in a game and to base your victory conditions on doing that?
Well, it's really interesting how they've done it in Archipelago. As you mentioned, it's very graphic. You know, there are pictures of people with top knots, dark skin, you know, rings around their necks. It's interesting to compare that with, say, a game like Puerto Rico, where you have the colonist discs, colonist in air quotes, which are little brown circles, and you need these little brown circles to operate your farm spaces, to man your buildings and everything like that. And in every turn, the air quotes colonist ship arrives with more of these air quotes colonists, which are these little brown discs. So yeah, it's quite abstracted.
They're not working for the fun of it.
Yeah, they're not coming on a holiday and going to pick some corn while they're there.
Yeah, and look, this gets us into the zone of historical simulation, which is something that's very familiar to gamers. People replay certain conflicts like the Civil War in America or what have you.
One of our favourite games, Twilight Struggle, you know,
it's about the Cold War.
It's the Cold War.
And I'm thinking, is it okay to replay something like a battle in World War II, or to replay World War II and raise the possibility of the Nazis actually winning? I mean, where does that put you ethically if you're playing a game for entertainment with that possible outcome?
Yeah, I know. It's something I have struggled with. And myself, personally, I don't like to play those sort of games with young kids in particular, because I think, whereas we can have the conversation around, well, you know, this is a historical simulation, for little kids it's like, well, this is Fritz, and now Fritz is dead, and, you know, Mrs. Fritz is at home with the little Fritzes, and he's not going to come home. And, you know, to me, I think that might cut a bit close to the bone to people. So I do sort of get shivers when I see young kids playing some of these historical simulations.
And also, you know, I mean, we're talking about board games, but this is probably even a bigger problem in the area of computer games.
Oh, don't get me started on those.
Yeah. I think because there are games coming out now in both, you know, on computer games and in board games that are based on the terrorism conflicts, the war on terror over the past 10 plus years, and some people are uncomfortable playing these things, and I'm wondering if you need to be divorced to a certain extent, if you need to maybe lack a little bit of immediate context in order to get some enjoyment from it.
Yeah, because I guess there's a whole area of, you know, the World War II games, which perhaps it's a case of, you know, enough time has passed for us to be able to play those sort of objectively. I don't know, but you're right. Even a game like Labyrinth, the War on Terror, which is very clinical and doesn't really focus on the detail of the jihadists, it is. A lot of people have said they're very uncomfortable with that game.
Mm-hmm. I still want to try it.
Yeah, me too, actually.
And I'll still be playing Archipelago, hopefully, maybe even later tonight, if Oren brings it round. Okay, we're going to talk to Ben Hughes about his Kickstarter project Spiders up next on The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
You're with the...
Yeah!
You're with Rock! The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio. That was Alligator Skin by Villainy. The track's dropped off my list there. That was a bit more like it, I reckon. Anyway, here we go.
An Australian board game designer. We're going to talk about his project Spiders, which is available now through Kickstarter. Ben, good evening. Welcome.
Hey, Trent. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're calling yourself Ambivalent Overlord Games. Nice
right.
name. And this game, Spiders, available now on Kickstarter. This isn't your first rodeo either. You're a veteran. You've got one game under your belt.
I've done another one on Possible before. Zombies, Aliens and Monsters, oh my. It's sort of the ultimate B-movie mashup of everything going wrong all at once. And one player gets to be the humans in amongst the chaos, and all the other players have their own objectives, trying to destroy or take over a city.
All right, and you launched that on Possible, and you've moved on to Kickstarter now.
Yeah, I sort of decided to go with Kickstarter because it's the place to go for board games. I figure it's Possible's been great, and I love Possible, but Kickstarter's definitely known for the board games already. So I decided to give them a go with the opening and go for the full 60 days and see how that goes. So far, it's been great.
Look, I love this concept. I was explaining it to my own kid earlier today, and it's just like, you know, such a great idea. You're a spider, you've got to build a web, you've got to catch three flies, but if you build your web too big, you get squished by the humans. Is that about it?
That's the gist of it, yep.
So tell us how it plays, mate. You're billing it as being a simultaneous strategy game. What exactly does that mean?
Okay, so the way it works is you have your hand of cards. The cards have each three actions on them, a human action, a fly action, and a spider action. So whichever card you choose to play, you're playing all of those actions all at once, so you've got to consider the consequences of what you're doing.
Okay, so it's a mix of good things and bad things on each card, right?
Well, it all depends on your situation. Sometimes you might have a perfect card that's going to go all your way. Sometimes you may have a card that's really going to just ruin the plans of your other players. So,
okay, so this is a card-based family game? You're billing this at ages 10 and up, yeah?
Yep, but I've played it with plenty of adults, and everybody loves it so far.
Okay, and it's the first spider to three flies is what, gets to eat their mate or something? Or
the standard game is first to three flies. There's options for variations, and there's also the deathmatch mode where you've enter the squisher human who will destroy spiders by stomping on them.
Well, look, one thing you have done right as far as Kickstarter campaigns goes is that you've got your rules up there, and that's about four pages worth of rules, so we can see just how easy this is for a family to play.
Yeah.
But there isn't a lot in the way of gameplay or anything up there. Are you going to be addressing that, Ben?
Yes, we've been working on a gameplay video this week, and I'm hoping that it will be finished and up by the end of this week.
Good stuff. I wanted to ask you about the components and the sort of printing and distribution process and how that all works for someone like yourself who's you know, obviously based in Australia. How is it working from Geelong and trying to put all this together? Where are you sourcing parts from?
Yeah, well, that's right. Of course, I'm getting a lot of the printing done locally, and I'm getting as much done as I can locally, but a lot of the components, like I'm tending towards using traditional wooden pieces for this one, so a lot of cubes and traditional meeples.
Yeah.
And they're all going to be coming from America. So, of course, the more I can get, then the cheaper it gets.
Yep.
So that's been a major consideration in the prices I've been putting on things.
Will this be a board or modular tiles, or what will it actually look like?
Just a board.
You're not just sort of wandering down to Officeworks and getting this printed up over the counter, are you?
No. Getting it all printed up as, quite professionally, in my opinion. I've got two different printers sourced, so I shouldn't name any printers at the moment because I haven't made the final decision. Okay. But, yeah, that's definitely going to be fully printed quite well. And all wooden pieces, as I said.
And so with a professional printing job on a board like that, or with ordering these parts from the States, how many sort of units are you looking at? Do you mind my asking?
No, I'm looking at a bare minimum of 100 units, but mm-hmm. preferably I'm really aiming for 500 units, so that way we can get the fancy boxes done like I was hoping for, and the spider meeples, that's the big thing I'm aiming for. I've got a group lined up that can do custom spider meeples, but it'll require a minimum of 500 orders to get that done.
Right, and obviously this is the nuts and bolts behind running a Kickstarter like this and setting your stretch goals is to do this research and to do these sums.
There were a lot of sums, about 2 weeks of back and forth and changing this big complicated spreadsheet that I had.
You heard the man, we need 500 orders of spiders in order to get the spider meeples. I'd like to see that.
Yep.
So the game is called Spiders. It's up on Kickstarter right now, up until... How long have we got to get in?
Until January 13th.
Ben Hughes from Ambivalent Overlord Games, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Trent.
So that was Trent talking to Ben Hughes earlier in the week about his Kickstarter. It's not too late to get on board. It's a game about spiders. Who doesn't love that? You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we are the Dice Men Cometh. We're talking about board games, card games. We're also talking about war games.
As I live and breathe on the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Trent and Mark, this is what happens when you let your co-host in learning how to push the buttons on a radio show.
What are you talking about?
He just takes it upon himself to start messing with the music and utterly without any sense of irony whatsoever. And if the guys at the Edge Radio Christmas party are listening right, well, I can guarantee they're not listening after that track. Frankie Goes to Hollywood? What are you thinking, man?
It's a game-themed song.
You've just aged us. 30 years.
Hey, it takes me...
That's the daggiest thing that anyone could have possibly done at any moment in history ever.
We're talking about war games, we're talking about board games, we're talking about card games with the Dice Men Cometh. Hey, I've got a single bullet in that gun, I'm going to keep it loaded and playing it week after week after week.
Okay, so this is game-themed music.
Absolutely.
Is that your thing? Okay, so, well, all right, fine. You know, we can talk about, what's that card game, Magic the Gathering?
Yeah.
And we can play that, was it America? You can do magic.
Ho, it's magic.
Oh, my God. You're not getting it, are you?
No.
What are we talking about now?
Let's talk about a game.
Please.
Let's talk about a game that's not a war game.
Mm.
We alluded to it briefly in our little segment about racism. It's Puerto Rico. It's one of the most well-known Euro games. Designed in 2002 by Andreas Seyfarth.
And I should point out it's a game I don't like. It's one of those cornerstones of any gaming collection, and it's held up there as being just an exemplar.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's rated number 4 on Board Game Geek as the fourth best game out there right now.
Of all time.
And look, it's 3 to 5 players. You probably guessed by the title. It's about colonizing and growing the city of Puerto Rico. And or the city of San Juan in Puerto Rico. And so what you are doing is you are planting fields, you are building up the town, and you're getting victory points. How you do this, it's actually quite a unique mechanism where you have a group of roles. You have 8 roles, and as each person goes around on the table, they pick a role. It's a bit like, and it actually we talked about Race for the Galaxy the other week, where each person plays like a special role. That idea came from Puerto Rico, where each turn, each person picks a role, they do that role and then everyone else does that same role, but the person who picks it gets a special little extra bit.
Yeah, so you're not doing the same thing every turn. You've got to choose what your action's going to be.
So, like, for example, one of the actions is the mayor, and when you pick the mayor, you get first pick of the colonists off the colonist ship.
Yes.
And you get a bonus one, like you find one hiding down the bottom that was stowed away, and then everyone else will...
No, really?
Yeah, you get an extra one. They don't talk about the one that was stowed away. I just threw that in for a bit of flavour.
Oh, okay, right.
But, you know, like you have the builder. So everyone can build a building and pay money for it, but you, if you're the person who's chosen the builder role, you get to buy the building for one coin less. If you're the craftsman, you get to make an extra good. If you're the trader, you get to get extra money for the goods you're trading in. So it's quite... there's a lot of thought goes into picking what role am I going to have, what role is Johnny over there going to pick, what role is Trent going to pick if he ever plays this game, because you might want them to do their thing first if they're going first in the turn, in order for you to, and as example might be, you might want to craft goods that you can then pick the captain role where you ship those goods, because that's the way you get victory points.
Right.
But if the person that you're relying on to craft goods doesn't pick the craftsman role, then you have to change what you're doing. So it is great. It's very tight mechanically. But one of the things is because of that, because there's so many things of, well, if I do this, then he's going to do this, then I can do that. It does promote analysis paralysis.
This is just staring at the board. Nothing's happening. Just going, oh, what do I do? And
yeah,
the clock's ticking.
Right.
And right.
Or even worse, where the player who verbalizes all that. So, well, if I pick the craftsman, then I can do this. No, but if I pick the settler, no. If I pick the prospector,
Mark, do we know anyone who does that while they're playing Puerto Rico?
Of course not.
Hi, John, if you're listening. look, I have to say, I've only played Puerto Rico once, and I got utterly, utterly creamed in it by extremely unsympathetic players. So I'd have to say that there is a bit of a learning curve with this, and so I didn't warm to it, but clearly I'm in the minority because this game is so well regarded.
Yeah, look, the funny thing is I've seen this, you know, it's quite a heavy game, but I've seen people who have never played other board games play this game and go, wow.
Okay, so Settlers of Catan is generally held up as being the sort of gateway game into the habit, in that it's a family-friendly game that anyone can pick up in not too long. Would you say that Puerto Rico fills that gap for the slightly more erudite and sophisticated gamer to be?
Yeah, absolutely. I think because mechanically it's quite simple. You know, what you're doing is quite simply. Getting a grip on the strategy is a totally different thing. And as you would have seen, you know, it is one of those games where people who know what they're doing, they know, oh, you do this, then you do this, then you do this. You create an engine, you create points, and it just, you know, you grind the beginners into the dirt.
And also, it's racist.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've established.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to be talking more games now. What do you do if you've got a group of 3 to 5? You can sit down and play Puerto Rico or any one of a number of games that we've been talking about, but what do you do if you've got a group of 10?
Or 20.
Or 30.
Or 68.
We'll let you know in just a moment as we talk large group games next on The Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark.
The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. That was The City, a track by The Breed, a great Tassie band. And look, I tell you, Trent, I've got a bit of a problem.
That's been clear for a while.
Okay.
Oh, you're talking about something else.
I've got another problem. I think I'm going to have a whole bunch of people over at my place. What can we do besides drink and generally be debaucherous?
And sit around in a ham-induced coma. At Christmas time.
Yes.
You could play a game, Mark.
Oh, that's an idea. What sort of game could I play?
You could play some kind of large group game that gets everybody up and talking to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than just sitting around a table, you know, rolling dice. And I mean, not that that isn't fun, but if you've got a lot of people, maybe there's a little bit of liquor flowing, you might want to get something that gets people doing a bit of trash talking, asking a few questions.
Yes.
One of the social interaction games that are... what are they actually called? Social interaction game, that's not right. What do you call these games?
Yeah, I don't know. Large group games is what I call them.
Yeah, well, it starts with one that we've been playing for, I guess the last year or so, The Resistance.
Yeah, and it was that game can play up to 10 people.
Mm.
And it's about a group of resistance fighters, basically, but there are traitors in the ranks. And so you'll deal out cards which are kept secret where slightly more than half of the people will be resistance fighters, and the remainders will be traitors in the ranks.
Yeah, and that's a hallmark of most of these games that we're going to talk about, where you get given a hidden role card, and you don't reveal that to anybody, but you've got to basically pretend to be a good guy or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, the granddaddy of all these is Werewolf. Many people who have been to any sort of con or a large group organisation may have played Werewolf, where, same thing, it's a village. of a night time, all the villagers go to sleep. Haha, one or two or three or a handful of people are werewolves. They wake up in the middle of the night. They kill someone. There's a moderator to run this, which is one of the downsides. Is that you need someone who sort of sits out of the game, but they control it. They'll tap someone on the shoulder and tell them that they've been killed. There's it might be another person called the seer who gets to have a guess at who might be a werewolf with their mystical powers. And, of course, the villagers wake up in the morning to find someone dead.
And, look, a lot of people might remember this from, you know, playing around a campfire at school camp or something like
that.
That's where I first encountered it. Now, so imagine that sort of, you know, times 10.
Yes.
With this modern version, there's a game called Ultimate Werewolf, has all these different roles and special powers associated with the cards and funky things that you can do.
Yeah, and that version, Ultimate Werewolf, can play up to 68 people, can you believe it?
Really?
With all these crazy roles, most of them I've never heard of. This game actually comes from another game called Mafia, which basically is exactly the same game, but with a Mafia theme, but we won't go there. We know about the Mafia theme.
Is it racist?
It could be. What do you want to know?
But then the Resistance has been really popular over the past couple of years, and that's the one where, yeah, you're the freedom fighters, some of you are traitors, and you have a leader who has to choose which people are going to go on a Resistance mission, and then everybody who's chosen on that mission has to decide whether or not it's successful. If there's any failures in there, then it falls over and the traitors start to win.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, the game, there is this mechanic that sort of supports the game, but the game is really in the discussion, in trying to ask questions, in trying to pinpoint who's telling porcupines, who's looking at someone in a funny way, who's voting down a mission that maybe they should vote up. And there's, of course, there's a new themed version of this called the Resistance Avalon.
Which is probably better, actually.
Yeah, I think so. The way that the roles work just smooths it a bit. You know, it's set in Arthurian times, and you've got the legions of Arthur, and you've got that guy with name who starts with M, Mordred, right. You know, you've got the minions of Mordred, who are the traitors who are trying to bring about the doom of the world. Yeah, look, it plays really tight. It plays up to 10 people. It's really great for one of those start of the night, end of the night type things while you're waiting for people to finish or after you've had a few too many beers.
And there's a new one of these social games coming out soon. Now, I backed this on Kickstarter a couple of months back. I'm hoping for it early in the new year. It won't get here in time for Christmas, unfortunately, but it's been absolutely huge on Kickstarter, raising $102,000.
That's pretty big for a small social
reaching
game.
Reaching all of its stretch goals. It's called Two Rooms and a Boom.
Ooh.
Plays 6 to 30 and maybe even more than 30 with the way it's coming out. It's this simple. Get your players together, divide them evenly into a red team and a blue team, and elect leaders. Everyone gets a card that gives them a role. It's a secret. Now, the blue team has a president, and the red team has a bomber. The leaders then elect hostages to travel between the two groups for three rounds, and at the end, if the bomber's in the same room as the president, boom, and the red team wins. Perhaps it's not PC, but it does sound like a lot of fun.
It does. You're with Edge Radio 99.3, The Dice Men Cometh. That was Panty Slingshot by Jay Wicked. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 with The Dice Men Cometh. I'm Mark. Trent is over the other side of the desk here. There's a couple of things I think we need to tidy up at the end here, Trent.
What's that?
Is that you bet me that I wouldn't say a particular word, and I don't know whether I can put it in or not. I think me leaving it out would be impossible.
You just can't help yourself, can you?
It's a challenge.
It's like Are You Being Served is playing on an endless loop inside your head, isn't it? That and Frankie Goes to Bloody Hollywood.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
It's been embarrassing.
Look, the other thing we need to clean up, though, is...
Hurry up, because the edge of reason's coming up next.
I set you a challenge again. How's your game going with a board?
What?
A board? Remember, you were designing a board game with a board this time?
So, like I said, the Edge of Reason's coming up next. A little bit of housekeeping. If you want to find out more about some of these games, you can check out the Hobart Game Society and the Dice Men Cometh on Facebook. And look, if you want to get to a place where some of these games are going to be played on a grand scale, CanCon's coming up in Canberra, a big gaming convention over the Australia Day long weekend. CanCon 2014. Quick Google search will get you all the details.
And remember our Facebook page, facebook.com/thedicemencometh. And stay tuned. Soon, very soon, we'll have an RSS feed of all our old episodes. We'll be turning into a podcast. We'll be taking over the world. See you next week in The Dice Men Cometh.